Good day, and welcome to the P&F Industries Inc. 2020 earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Richard Goodman, the company's general counsel. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning. Welcome to P&F Industries full year 2020 conference call. With us today from management are Richard Horowitz, Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Joseph Molino, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that any forward-looking statements discussed on today's call by our management, including those related to the company's future performance and outlook, are based upon the company's historical performance and current plans, estimates, and expectations, which are subject to various risks and uncertainties, including but not limited to risks related to the global outbreak of COVID-19 and other public health crises, exposure to fluctuations in energy prices, debt and debt service requirements, borrowing and compliance with covenants under our credit facility, disruption in the global capital and credit markets, the strength of the retail economy in the United States and abroad, risks associated with sourcing from overseas, importation delays, customer concentration, impairment of long-lived assets and goodwill, unforeseen inventory adjustments or change in purchasing patterns, market acceptance of products, acquisition of businesses, regulatory environment, and information technology system failures and attacks, and those other risks and uncertainties described in the reports and statements filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including, among others, as described in our most recent annual report on Form 10-K, our quarterly reports on Form 10-Q, and our other filings. These risks could cause the company's actual results for future periods to differ materially from those expressed in any forward-looking statement made by or on behalf of the company. Forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company undertakes no obligation to update publicly or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future developments, or otherwise. And with that, I would now like to turn the call over to Richard Horowitz. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Rich. Thank you all, everybody here on the call today, for joining us this morning on our full year 2020 results. I hope and pray that all of you are doing well under these continuingly difficult circumstances with COVID-19, although the vaccine rollout, which will certainly help control this deadly disease, is underway, we are still working to get past the harsh effects of this global pandemic. Lastly, our thoughts and prayers are with all of those affected by COVID-19 in your family, your friends, or anybody else around. I'd like to direct your attention to the company's press release that was released earlier today, which includes the company's December 31, 2020 balance sheets, and statements of operations and statements of cash flows, and discussions related to the company's 2020 results of operations. This release should answer most of your questions. In order to make a better use of everyone's time here this morning and be mindful of the purpose of this conference call, I would like to note the following two items, as I've said in the past. Firstly, as we have done for the prior two conference calls and will become our standard practice from this point forward, we will move directly to a question and answer session and not restate what is already in this morning's release. And secondly, please be aware that we will only be answering questions directly relating to the company's results of operations and financial condition. We must insist that you adhere to this procedure. Management will not be entertaining any questions that go beyond the scope of this call. And with that all in there and what I've said, we'd be happy to answer any pertinent questions anybody may have at this time. Orlando, please open up the line. Thank you.
Absolutely. And if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a quick moment to assemble the queue. And once again, everyone, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we'll go to our first question from Andrew Shapiro with Lawndale Capital Management. One moment, please.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah. We hear you fine.
Great. Several questions. I'll ask a few and I'll back out into the queue in case there's others. First and foremost, I wanted to find out or ask if you guys, is there a particular reason or why is it in your fourth quarter release you only provide fiscal year end, and we can't easily determine and calculate here the fourth quarter results without having to go to the year-to-date 9 months and try to back things out and reverse engineer it. And most companies break out their fourth quarter. Is there a particular problem or reason that PNF chooses not to do that?
Yeah, Andrew, we read your letter this morning, and we've gone through this with you, and we've gone through this with our lawyers and our accountants. And we believe the information contained in our press release is totally appropriate for a company of our size, and our lawyers and our accountants have told us without question that they are. So that being said, I'm happy to answer any other questions, but we've been advised that that's the way that it's done for companies of our size or much bigger companies, actually, even. So that's why we do it.
Well, I don't know, maybe they should widen their scope of research on it. Other companies do the fourth quarter, and they break it out. I just don't understand if there was a particular problem for them to do so.
Yeah, so why don't you answer, Andrew. Giving you the answer, let's go on with your questions, because that's what we've been advised to do, and that's how we proceed.
Okay, I'm just wondering why they advise that. Anyway,
can't answer. Go ahead. Are there any questions you have?
Can you, things have evolved and on this. I'd like to get a feel for where operations currently stand. These are questions with respect to the impacts of COVID-19. And it sounds like in the background you're still working from home and the dog's there. I wanted to understand where do operations currently stand for the company, both at its headquarters, which sounds like you guys might be working remotely, and in each manufacturing facility, and what is the return to normal plans and expectations of timing you guys have, or what is the new normal for the company headquarters as well as the your few manufacturing facilities?
Go ahead, Joe. You can answer that, I guess.
Sure. With respect to the subsidiaries, we're fully staffed at the operational level. We are fortunate that we can socially distance and compartmentalize people fairly easily at each of our locations. So there really, at this point, is next to no impact on our production capabilities. People in offices where things are a little tighter alternate shifts, there's a certain schedule that we follow to try to maintain social distance and have as few people in tight quarters as possible. The same goes for New York. We're in the office 60% of the time, but again, we try to minimize the. We never have the full staff in here at once, and that will probably be the case. I mean, I don't want to project too far forward because I can't tell you what the path of the virus is going to be and where we're going to be on vaccinations, but I would imagine that we'll ease back into full everyone being in the office at some point. But for now, it's a little too early to say exactly when that'll be, but that is certainly the plan. Mm-hmm. But it's not affecting our ability to do our jobs.
Okay. And do you have an estimate of the percentage of the PNF workforce presently vaccinated with one shot or fully vaccinated? And has the company initiated or considered initiating financial incentives or bonuses for employees who do get vaccinated?
Go ahead, John.
No, we have not considered that. As I said, right now, the impact on our ability to generate production and ship products is next to nothing. So I'm not sure what that incentive would do other than make people, feel better. And obviously the more people vaccinated, the better. But the impact on our operations is really non-existent at this point.
It's fairly minimal. In the corporate office, three people have been vaccinated at this time. And the restrictions are the age of the people and the rules in the state. So we have to adhere to the rules like everybody else, like you, Andrew, and everybody else. But as Joe said, but we will consider it as best we can, you know, with what's going on. But as far as the company itself, really very minimal impact. Thankfully, and all of our companies are really operating fairly uneventfully at this time.
Okay. And my final question on the COVID-19 issues, and I'll back out into the queue with, but I have questions for your divisions and product lines. I think you commented in your press release regarding the demand, product demand perspective, and your sales impacts regarding COVID-19. Are you experiencing, and what types of steps are you doing to mitigate any negative experiences from impacts in your supply chain, which we are increasingly reading about, you know, impacting manufacturing companies?
Yeah, we Joe can add on to this also, but we're having, which I'm sure you read about every day in the newspapers, we're having the same problems that everyone else is having in terms of delays in shipments coming from China. Now the latest little wrinkle is the Suez Canal is shut down and everything is all backed up there. But way before that, we're adding 6-8 weeks to deliveries, kind of like a regular standard. And even when they come into the country, be it Miami or be it that on the West Coast, the shipments can sit there for quite a period of time, days, week, even 2 weeks, before customs and everybody else lets it go. And that's something that's been going on with us for several months now, and people I know and other businesses are finding the exact same thing, and people who I know in the shipping business, and I know several in that those businesses, they're all very, very frustrated with what's going on and how it's happening. And seems to be a very convenient excuse. Whenever things don't work out, they blame it on COVID. So, I mean, it may be right in many cases, but I can't imagine why now, with China as opened as it is, it's not getting any better, but it is not getting any better yet. Certainly. Joe, you want to add to that?
I mean, I would just add that the impact on the importation is primarily with Florida-Pneumatic. High-tech doesn't have a significant portion of inputs coming from Asia. As a result of having a several-tier distribution system, however, ultimately there isn't really a significant impact on ultimate sales in that, you know, for example, Home Depot, there's distribution centers we ship to, and then there's inventory at the stores. So customers are not showing up at the stores not being able to get product because, again, there's several levels of inventory in the stream.
And are there other steps you're taking to mitigate the effects of this continuing slowdown in some supply?
Well, go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe. I mean, you're going to say the same thing I am. Go ahead, Joe.
I mean, we're projecting ahead as best we can. We're making sure that we're providing additional safety stock, and we're keeping a very, you know, tight control over, you know, the inventory levels, and working with suppliers where we can. There are also alternatives with respect to where ships can land. In the past, we've been able to redirect things should that become necessary. Right now, it hasn't become necessary, but we have several levers we could pull to move where ships actually land and possibly from there go over land to get to us. So right now it hasn't really impacted the business in a significant way, but we're obviously keeping an eye on it.
Okay. I have several questions. Yes, go on.
Yeah. We've increased our safety, like Joe said, our safety bit a little bit, but it's a balance. We don't want to be overly, you know, we don't want to buy too much stuff. It's money and we have to balance it, but we've been doing a fairly good job of staying ahead of it for the most part. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, I have several other questions, but I'll back out in the queue
I don't believe there's anybody on the queue right now, Andrew, so you can go.
All right. So moving on and talking a little bit about your gear products acquisitions, which were made right before the pandemic kicked in and you were even literally integrating equipment and consolidating facilities as a COVID hit, and it's now kind of become, I guess you call it, your power transmission group, PTG. Does COVID cloud your ability to elaborate on the strategic benefits of the acquisition yet? You talked about that the acquisition opened up a broader range of industries for you, and you mentioned specifically actively pursuing opportunities in healthcare, transportation, food production, and power generation industries. And your current press release issued this morning said you've witnessed an increase in orders and sales activity. Can you elaborate a little bit more about this and the impact and benefits of this acquisition towards that, and what has been your success in these particular new industries you were targeting?
I think Andrew, we said it pretty well in the press release, but Joe, if you want to add more color to it, you can.
Well, the power transmission group, and you know, just talking about gear specifically, really anything that's got any kind of drivetrain in it is an opportunity for a gear. There's an almost limitless number of opportunities for power transmission. I don't know that we're, and all of them have very good margins. It's not about the, once you get out of the very small gears, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but we're focused, what we're doing is focusing on regions at a time and establishing a couple of hundred square mile or radius around places where we've got salespeople located and a representative that are working with us closely. So, I don't know that we have any particular industry that we have to have. What our salespeople are doing is reaching out in a particular region, and there may be particular kinds of businesses in that region that predominate. For example, in the Pennsylvania area, there's a lot of mining business, and in the West Virginia area, there's something else. So it's kind of almost regionally specific. So once we've got a salesperson in a region, they go and see what's out there. So I wouldn't say that we're focused on a particular application because there's so many really good ones, but there's a lot of opportunities. I will say this, that it's better, but there's still a fair amount of limitation on where we can visit. People still don't want, many potential customers don't want visitors. So we have to conduct the Zoom calls and phone calls and whatnot. But given the what you're trying to do here, a visit makes a big difference. Getting an engineer to sit down with another engineer with a gearbox in front of them and talk through the details of how they want it made or remade or reverse engineered. There really isn't any replacement for sitting in front of somebody. But having said that, we're actually pretty happy with the results we're getting and the positive feedback we're getting where we do visit.
Yeah, it seems in certain geographic areas, very few, but certain geographic areas, they're more willing to see us and to see customers, for us to see customers. But for the most part, they're very, 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 very reluctant to do that yet, opening it up. Aerospace in specifics, that's not PTG, but I'll get your next question now. Aerospace is absolutely not allowing visitors, still, for the most part,
okay.
In the main
case. All right, sticking to the PTG before I move on to aerospace. So when you describe an increase in order and sales activity, what is the typical time horizon from getting an order to the product hitting the revenue stream and the cash flow generation stream, and in terms of your sales activity, when you talk about a sales activity, are you talking about like booked, these are booked revenues already for the first 2 months compared to 2020?
I'm not sure. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I understand the question, Andrew. Maybe you could rephrase it.
Okay, so you're I only can go off of what you have in your press release. There is no 10, K yet. But you witnessing an increase in order and sales activity, when Boeing gets an order, that is like multiple months, if not a year or more, before it actually hits the revenue stream because of the production cycle of what they're making. Now, you guys are making gears or designing or doing something. So when you get an order and you have order activity and sales activity, I'm just trying to understand the typical time horizon when that quote activity results in and becomes a reportable revenues in product shipment.
I would say, could be as short as 4 weeks, could be as long as 3 months. It depends on the complexity of what's being ordered. If it's a reorder from a current customer, that just goes right into the production queue. There's not a lot of engineering involved. But, if we've got to do some engineering, and depending on the complexity, we could go back and forth with the customer a few times where that could lead to 3 months between mm-hmm. an order and delivery. But if it's a current account, I would say it's just as fast as we can get it into the production queue, which could be as quick as 4 weeks.
And for the activity to have warranted inclusion in your press release to talk about, we got increased order and sales activity. Are these mostly reorders, or are these a mix which includes engineering and design type of activities?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's not.
It's a little of everything. It's a little of everything. Okay. And you also described it's not really an industry issue. It's more of what's in the region of where your sales force or independent reps, et cetera, are.
Yeah.
If you consider the United States as a full white map, how much of the country is there really white space where you're not, regionally represented? And about what portion, or are there particular geographies where you're well represented to get a feel for the regions you're in and the regions you could expand to?
Go ahead, Joe.
We're very strong east of the Mississippi. We're very strong in the Northeast. We're strong in the Midwest. We're strong in the Southeast. We are building representation in the Southwest, and I would say the Northwest and the Far West is where we don't really have a whole lot going on yet.
And there, it's not like you're shipping cement. There are really no major barriers for you to eventually grow into the West Coast.
That's correct.
All right. Just trying to understand, the nature of this new acquisition and business as it's evolving to become kind of a reportable subsegment there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to aerospace, which impacts both high tech as well as Florida Pneumatic, but Jiffy being inside of Florida Pneumatic, I want to kind of focus maybe on the aerospace there. Boeing's got the 737 reapproved. They are, talking about a very, slow re-ramp. We are beginning to see some orders, literally new orders, for 737s, and of course it's being well publicized how there are crowds at the airport already, and airlines are experiencing increased bookings, and of course have gotten some serious financial bailout. What can you give us an update a little bit more, or a little more clarity, obviously, than the one or two sentences in the press release, as to, I guess, visibility on and timing of your order activity in the aerospace side, which obviously is going to be a lag. Are we talking about a few months lag? Is it a multiple quarters lag, years lag, or are you already seeing green shoots?
Yeah, Andrew, we read this stuff pretty much all the time, but we read everything that you read. It's not like Boeing calls us and gives us updates. It's not like we get that. I'm just going to point out to you that the 737 orders have started to increase for them. But mind you, they have over 200, I think it's two, the last I heard, it was 230 built planes in inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Built mm-hmm. planes in inventory. So they've got to sell a very large portion of that 230 planes that are built and sitting in a desert somewhere. I've seen pictures of it. I don't remember exactly where it is. Joe can maybe tell you, and he may remember. But anyway, they're
Arizona.
There. Arizona, okay. So they're there. And until that gets way depleted, we're not going to see any orders really to speak of on anything to do with 737, or for that matter, the 787. And we do get orders from Boeing for the other factories for other things, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to what we would get if they were doing their normal business on 737 and all that stuff. We're optimistic that it's a great plane, and then now that it's gotten over its bad press and everything a year plus later, we are optimistic that being that it's such a good product that over time it'll get better. We're thinking more like the second half of the year at best, and maybe more towards the fourth quarter of the year at best. But mind you, we could be very wrong. I mean, they can get a whole lot of orders from some airlines, American or Delta or something like that, and things could change. But the information we have right now, that's what would be my take. Joe, do you have anything different to say to that?
No, I mean, right now, what we're hearing, and if you follow the analysts, I don't see Boeing ramping up production until towards the back half of the year and into next year. So I wouldn't imagine on the commercial side we're going to see much until Q3 or 4.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And everyone, as an additional reminder to the audience, please press *1 for a question.
Okay. And are you seeing any are you gaining access to approval on, being spec'd into any additional or new military programs?
The answer is yes. Joe, you can give some information on that, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah, we're working with several military manufacturers on products that we've been developing with them. I mean, I wouldn't say they're necessarily by program. These products are something you could use across multiple platforms. So it doesn't have to be the F-35 or whatever, but it's more specific to, applications that run across platforms.
But is this we'll call it like a new line of work or a new product offerings for PNF that had not previously existed?
Yeah, we had introduced I'll call it an application tool that was very popular for military applications, kind of just as the pandemic was kicking into full gear. So we haven't really gotten the full benefit of our work there. But I would say military is probably going to open up faster than commercial production, because the demand is already there. You know, you don't have to wait for the demand to come from the, you know, people to get in the, you know, at the airport. So we will see that, and we are seeing that. But again, it's still, it's also contingent about, contingent upon these military manufacturers getting into full production, which they're not yet.
Right. Now, obviously, Europe is having another wave. Travel to Europe and European sales initiatives, you've inferred in your press release, are certainly further delayed from a reopening, unlike what we're experiencing in the United States. You had not been into Airbus before, and it has been an effort. Have you been able to make any progress into the Airbus acceptance or approval process, et cetera, during this period of maintained distance and non-physical presence, or does it all have to wait until a reopening?
Yeah, we really have not. Joe?
Yeah, it has to wait. We can't. We had visits scheduled. We had tools to show them, but they're not letting anybody into the facility.
They're not people yet. And this is a product that really needs sold. You know, with firsthand, like Joe said earlier, Zoom calls are not really good with this stuff. They got to handle things and talk and see things, and so they have to wait. But they are getting. We were told by our people in Europe last week that they're getting to the point that it should be getting better soon. Germany was going on a lockdown Easter weekend, and then they retracted that. I don't know if you read that yesterday or the day before. They retracted it now because it was such a pushback from the population. So hopefully that'll help, you know, spearhead. And the AstraZeneca is reopened. So the more success they have with the vaccine, like in America, the quicker it'll happen. But I would say it's still a couple of months away at best.
Right. And does this hindrance or impediment of, you know, the need for physical presence for aerospace-like tools, does it extend to the progress you were developing for AerCat tools and distribution opportunities in Europe, or is that something that you have made progress on or could make progress on while things still remain Zoom-like?
Yeah, we've made some progress with AerCat, but still it's slow. It's a challenging time for everybody because of the businesses, of course, and the, you know, that kind of, and the COVID. So.
Okay, I'll back out again. I have questions on high tech as well as Florida pneumatic.
Okay.
So come back to me when if no one else is in the queue.
And an additional reminder to the audience, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question.
Orlando, any other questions?
Currently, there are no other questions, but again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question.
Yeah, because I believe Andrew Shapiro said he had other questions, so let him come back in if he does it.
Okay. And Mr. Shapiro, please press star 1 if you do have additional questions, but again, to the audience, you can also press star 1 as well. And once again, Mr. Shapiro, if you do have additional questions, please press star 1 at this time.
He may have lost his connection, but he announced that he had a question, so we'll give it a couple more minutes. And if we can't get him on, then we'll just have to conclude the call. He may have disconnected. He may have had a cell problem.
And in the meantime, once again, to the general audience, please press star one if you do have a question. Once again, that is star one if you have a question.
Joe, we're not going to stay on this call with everybody on the call. If there's no one, if you can't get back in, you can't get back in, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll give it another 2 minutes, but if we can't, I don't want to inconvenience everybody else on this call. Is there, Orlando, did he have a number that you
yeah,
could call him up?
I believe, I think I have a cell number.
So,
actually, he just rejoined and queued up. Let me open his line up. One moment, please.
Hi, guys.
All right, and Mr. Shapiro, please go ahead.
Yeah, Andrew.
Sorry, I got disconnected.
There's no other calls here, and we waited on this line because you told us that you had other questions, but we don't want to inconvenience everybody.
So, thank you.
Your question. Go finish all your calls so you don't get disconnected again, and we'll answer all your questions.
Yeah. Thank you. The PPP loan, I'm trying to get clarified. You applied for forgiveness, and they have a certain time limit to do that. Can you provide the timing of when you submitted the application and when you believe you will have your loan forgiven?
We applied about a month ago, officially, maybe 5 weeks ago, something along those lines. And we have been told that no public companies over $2 million threshold have heard any response at all. And we got a receipt from them that they received it, and it's in their hands. Nothing else to say.
Right, but they haven't given any notice that they're going to, you know, look at things more closely other than what you've submitted in your application.
No, but nothing. Okay. We've heard nothing since their receipt of it.
Okay. When you are forgiven on some or all of this amount, that forgiveness of a loan needs to hit your GAAP financials in some place. Joe, what do you anticipate to be where you'll be booking this? Would this be considered other income? Is it going to be a reduction of SG&A? How do you think you'll be handling this?
It's other income, Andrew.
Okay, there'll be other income. Mm-hmm. And does the company have a tax NOL? I would think it has accumulated as a result of this last year's losses that would then pretty much drop that entire other income number to the bottom line.
Yes, we have an NOL. We've filed for a refund. We will be filing for a refund, and we would expect to get some sort of refund later in the year.
Right, but with respect to other income to be booked on a loan forgiveness, is the NOL what was the year end NOL size and?
Well, I can't speak to the NOL exactly, but I can tell you that. We expect a high six figure refund.
Okay, and does that mean then the other income number that will come in on the forgiveness of the PPP loan will be for GAAP purposes be taxed, and the net effect will be your after-tax rate on that other income, or will there be still continued NOL offset, which drops the entire other income line from the forgiveness straight to the bottom line?
Well, the refund will end up as a tax pickup. It doesn't show up as other income. The forgiveness is other income. I'm not going to get it. We're still not having a great year, so I can't tell you exactly where we're going to end up tax-wise, but that you're right, there's a tax effect. It's not a tax. The refund, the forgiveness is a taxable event. Having said that, we were able to, let me back up. The forgiveness is not a taxable event. There was talk that the expenses that were going to be associated with calculating the refund were going to be not tax deductible. But that changed. So those were
right.
Tax deductible. So at the end of the day, it's a non-taxable gain. Now, don't quote me on exactly how we're going to handle that with respect to deferred taxes and all that, but we will get it's a $2.9 million loan and hopefully forgiveness, and that's how much we're going to end up with.
Yeah, so it's almost $1 a share that drops to the bottom line, a little less.
Yeah,
we don't know. We could be wrong. It could be. I wouldn't be counting that. It's that we don't have a crystal ball. These things are out of our control. We may get $2 million. We don't know. We just don't know.
You had payroll expenses. There's certainly a calculation on increased payroll, reduced payroll, yada yada yada, all the things. Now, when you applied for forgiveness, though, you did. You submitted a request for and support for a forgiveness of the entire loan?
We did everything that was required. We did everything that's required, and we can't answer any more questions until we hear from the SBA. It's out of our control. It really is.
When you apply for your forgiveness, you apply for a certain amount based on what you ended up doing in terms of payroll and everything else. In your application for forgiveness, did you apply for forgiveness of the entire amount?
I don't think that's something we really, really can discuss. But whatever we apply for, we're hoping to get. I don't want to be elusive about it, but we can't get into specifics. They've been told us not to get into any more specifics about it. When it comes up, we'll let you. You'll know like everybody else exactly what it is, and we're very hopeful that it's going to be a very sizable part of the number. But we can't guarantee that.
All right, whatever. I understand why things have to be so difficult.
I can't give any more answers than what we can control.
Okay. Now, in the in our attempt, because it's not easy, you don't break out the fourth quarter. In our attempt in determining the fourth quarter for your divisions, by taking the full fiscal year and taking out the 9-month 10-Q numbers, which we do have because we don't even have the 10-K, it looks like Hi-Tech had a negative gross margin for the fourth quarter. And I wanted to get a feel for, if you can, as to, how much of that number how much of Q4's cost of goods sold is a non-cash item, and to determine and understand whether Hi-Tech on a gross profit/gross loss basis, whether it was losing money during the fourth quarter from just this, the production and sales of its products.
It's a little complicated. I understand the answer, but Joe, why don't you explain it better if you can?
To my knowledge, the margin generated in Q4 is substantially related to operations. I don't have it in front of me, but there are always adjustments we make to inventory and the valuations and the reserve. So I'm sure there's plenty of that in there, but it's really it's an issue of the lack of sales and the lack of overhead absorption. That's the primary thing that's going on in Q4.
Right. So overhead absorption really is a non-cash item when it comes to gross profit. Clearly, it's a cost item that you're trying to amortize over. But the products aren't going out the door at some kind of loss to cost of production other than the overhead absorption. Is that right?
There's no fire sales on product to generate revenue. That's not what's happening here.
Okay. And there was no notable inventory, warranty, or other kinds of non-cash reserve that also impacted cost of goods sold versus prior quarters?
There was no significant warranty issues, no.
Yeah. Or inventory reserve issues relative to, you know, prior quarters? I know you do it every quarter. You have stuff, but.
I don't recall specifically what the inventory reserve adjustments from the quarter mean. Sometimes those are cleaned up at the end of every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the headline is lack of sales and lack of absorption.
Okay. And in terms of lack of sales, again, backing out and trying to create fourth quarter so we can compare it to third quarter, it looks like sequentially from September quarter to the December quarter, there was a meaningful reduction in the revenue streams generated from the power transmission group subsector. Can you clarify and discuss a little bit what that's attributable to?
Well, in general, Andrew, Q4 in several of our sectors is always worse. It just is. High tech, especially.
So it's a seasonal issue. Yeah.
On the Florida-matic side, aerospace, those guys shut down for a couple of weeks. So that's to be expected. On the high tech side, it is quite common that Q4 is our worst quarter, even in a good year. So I don't know how many. I don't know that I would draw a lot of conclusions from Q3 to Q4 revenue change.
Yeah. Well, in Power Transmission Group, which is a new group, there is no prior year comparables for us to see the seasonality swing. All we could see was that last September quarter, the third quarter, you did about $1 million in revenue attributable to PTG. And this quarter, again, reverse engineering year end, full year minus 9 months, it looks like you did about $550,000. And so that was a sizable drop, but I don't have a prior year to go by. But so you're saying that in the power transmission group, we should expect to see going forward is a headwind in every Q4 versus Q3.
Yeah, I would say in general, unless we're able to secure, you know, a fair amount of growth to get out in front of that, and, you know, we're doing our best to grow it. But, yes, that is true.
Right. Okay. Now, you did say that aerospace similarly has that. Now, again, I don't have your breakout where you provided fourth quarter. I'm doing year annual numbers minus 9 month numbers. In the September quarter, you did about $1.3 million in aerospace sector sales inside of Florida Pneumatic, but it looks like you did about $2.3 million, or an increase of about $1 million in December in terms of reported revenue in aerospace. So was there anything in particular that you attribute that to, especially since you feel that fourth quarter is a headwind seasonal quarter for aerospace normally?
I would say it's not attributable to anything, assuming your math is correct, which I haven't checked. But there was no discernible improvement in our expectations between Q3 and Q4 in aerospace.
Q4 was down year over year, no doubt. But it was just sequentially, it was up fairly.
Yeah, I don't think. In all due respect, I don't think your numbers are correct, Andrew. We'll check it out. We'll somehow get the answer to you, but I don't think that's correct at all.
Okay,
but we'll get back.
Now, industrial catalog similarly dropped in the fourth quarter versus the September quarter, and historically that has not seen a sequential seasonality decline from, you know, my multiple years of that subsector when you break things out. Was there anything in particular that impacted the industrial slash catalog for Florida Pneumatic for the fourth quarter?
It's the ups and downs of the market with COVID and all, everything else that goes with it. That's all it is.
Things are very, very spotty throughout the year. I wouldn't attribute. There's no systematic reason I can think of that Q4 was worse than Q3, other than I think as the fits and starts of being in the middle of this pandemic are going to generate some nonsensical sequential changes in revenue. That's all I can really tell you.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
Andrew, what I said earlier, that we're still in the midst of everything. In this world out of the woods, not even close. And so you can have days and weeks that change dramatically just like that. I mean, perfect example is the price of oil went from $55 a barrel to $59 in the snap of a finger, 3 days. It just happens. You know, when Washington decides they want to do something, it affects everything going down the line.
A big spike in oil or a move in oil doesn't generally, you know, move the needle for you guys one way or another that quickly.
Well, if there's longevity to the higher price points and tools, we'll get more business. And we've seen some of that. But, you know, it can go the other way also. But it's just, my point is you cannot count on anything predictably like in the past how things are. There's just no way to predict what's going on in the world right now. So we look at it every day and talk about it every day. And as we see it, we can react, relate to it. So.
Right. And here we are, mid-March. We've had, a decent amount of time when there has been a run-up in the oil. And you mentioned that. Are you seeing increased order activity coming from the oil and gas sector ready as whether it's as a result of the higher prices or things have just bottomed out and they've lost and need to replace their tools? Are you seeing an increase in stabilization there?
We've seen not stabilization. We've seen an increase, but not enough to really notice, dramatically to the overall company, but, you know, it's not a bigger part of the business, but we've seen an increase, but it's not life-changing by any means yet.
Okay. And with respect to Home Depot, which, you know, as a large retail customer and you're selling that product, you know, direct consumer facing and all that, that's generally been a lower margin product or subsector for you versus, let's say, aerospace inside of Florida and pneumatic. Seasonally, do you have feedback about how your new products that were introduced, I guess now a year ago, how they fared in terms of sell-through and results to Home Depot here in their big fourth quarter, which I think is your bigger third quarter, to know about their need for restocking and reorders, et cetera, for the coming year?
They're up and down as well, and they're unpredictable. And we're basically doing. They've been better than our other customers for the most part. So our year has been, I would say, essentially flat to slightly up from last year.
Is that right, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's doing reasonably well there are the spray guns. The other lines are, the other SKUs are actually doing a little bit worse.
Okay, and has the spray gun increase offset the headwinds of the other SKUs?
It has.
Okay.
And totally out of left field. This just speaks to my point. I keep saying to you, but so you understand that things change in inexplicable reasons along the way for all customers.
Okay. All right. I think that may be the end of my questions, other than, again, to ask that your advisors who tell you, I understand you don't have to break out the fourth quarter, but that your advisors are telling you all these other companies don't break out their fourth quarter, is to perhaps revisit that and re-research that, and maybe this coming 2021's fourth quarter, you would indeed help your shareholders analyze and be able to discern things your calls. You're only a small company, and you're not going to, you know, this isn't a way to help attract analyst coverage or attention and investor interest. So,
okay.
It's better to make things easier for your shareholders and prospective investors.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Have a good day. And a good holiday.
Thanks.
Are there any other questions?
There are no questions in the queue.
Okay. Thank you all for your time today, and we look forward to speaking to you with our Q1 numbers. I believe it's in May, or June. We'll be in touch, and we'll let you know the exact date. Thank you all, and have a good day.
You want to get on the bridge?
And this concludes today's call. We thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.
Yeah, let's get on the bridge.
All right, everyone.